Hello, Corby Cummer.
Hello, Jim. Hello, Marjorie.
Hello. Corby Cummer. Great to talk to you. So let's go to a really great story, I think. What's going on with Springfield? They have something up there called the Homegrown Springfield Meals Program for the city's public schools.
And I absolutely love this story.
Yeah. Tell us about what they're doing.
Well, first of all, it's since 2019, so it's 5 years that the so-called Culinary Nutrition Center, which produces from-scratch meals for more than 29,000 students a day across more than 65 schools, got built and opened. $21 million of funding through government and private sources. And it's this fellow named, Andrew Stratton. And he opened this door to good meals and good nutrition for students. And you've had the Shaw's, right, from the Shaw's?
Oh, yes.
They're My Way Cafe.
Yeah,
isn't that what it was called?
It in Boston.
Yeah.
And the idea that it's enterprising, and I remember Henry, and I should remember his last name, something like Abelay in Brookline decades ago, also made good from-scratch meals. It depends on someone like Stratton in Springfield deciding, I'm going to make this my mission. I'm going to raise the money so we can make from-scratch meals. And, you know, it makes Springfield seem like a paradise, just the way UMass Amherst is supposed to have the very best food. I think we've all got to go out to Springfield and Amherst in the next few months just to have the school food. But among the many good things this points out is that Stratton and his teammates can regulate the amount of sodium and sugar that comes across, that goes through all the meals they make, because they're making it from scratch. They're buying in bulk. They don't have to rely on central suppliers. They sort of cut corners and do mingy things to meet the school lunch standards from the School Nutrition Association and the USDA. And they do the very minimum required to show they've got lower sugar or whole grains. You can really control all of it if you're doing it from scratch.
By the way, the statistic that's quoted in this piece by Francie Lynn in the Globe about the Springfield situation is that in 22-23 school year, the school meal participation from the kids was 50%. In 1 year, it rose to 79%. I mean, that is huge. That is incredible. And what's the statistic, Corby, about kids in urban school systems get a hugely disproportionate share of their nutrition
from
their school meals,
breakfast,
right?
And lunch.
Yeah,
it's crucial. That's why summer feeding benefits are essential, because entire families rely on this to feed students. And so there's nothing casual. And as much as we poke holes in the overly high sodium content, the chocolate milk that's allowed, it's a tremendously important nutritional safety net for the entire country.
Good for them. It's really great.
So the reason that more school districts don't do this is?
Money. It's hard to. They tore out their kitchens decades ago, and they had like one central commissary, or they had one provider. Revolution Foods is the example of a national for-profit that tried to go into communities and say, from our central commissary, we are a for-profit, we will give you food at the national reimbursement rate, and it's just going to be so much better, and we're going to interview you in the community about what's culturally appropriate. In Springfield, everything about that story was so great. They would have a lot of Latino families because vast, maybe 85%, a huge amount of the students in Springfield are Latino. They would come in and they would say, they would taste things and they would say, no, it needs more of this, it needs less that. That's how you get so-called culturally appropriate foods. You bring people in to say, will you eat this and will it be good? Another thing you can do from scratch is larger, it's money, and it's the ability to get equipment in central commissaries. Boston tried doing it 15 years ago, and I think they had a number of kitchens that supplied several schools. But you have to raise money, usually private.
So, Corby, as soon as we bid you adieu, we're going to talk to our listeners about their love affair with Costco. And Costco, you know, the BJs of the world, Costco, that sort of thing. I bet Marjorie, an amount that shall remain undisclosed, that you had never been to Costco. Do I win my bet or do I lose?
Oh, me? Never. No.
Okay, despite that, There is a really comprehensive piece in Forbes magazine, which we'll discuss in some great detail. Well, even though you haven't been there, you can discuss the allure. Why is Costco's? It's not just the fact that stuff is dirt cheap, particularly food, but they sell coffins and everything else too. What? Why do you think it's as huge?
Well, first of all, it was in Fortune.com. It's an important distinction because Fortune still pays for reporting. Forbes doesn't really.
Oh, did I say Forbes? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I meant Fortune. Sorry.
Fortune. It was a deep dive into Costco. Deep. I have to say that my wonderful nephew and his very wonderful girlfriend live in our house in Jamaica Plain. We get to cohabitate with them when we're there, and our entire house is full of Costco purchases and enormous boxes of Kleenex and toilet paper and laundry detergent and Ziploc bags and absolutely everything else, like paper towels, lifetime supplies. What I learned a lot from the Fortune piece about Costco is that just like Stu Leonard's, the chain in Connecticut that has a cult following and makes you follow a certain circuit in the store the way Wegmans does too, everything is deliberate. The lack of signage. They want a treasure hunt experience.
Yeah, that's true.
Find the $600 bottle of creme de la mer Estee Lauder that you could otherwise only get at Neiman Marcus. There's only one or two in the store, but they're very deliberate about these sort of Easter eggs they hide so that you can get these bargains, so that you will renew your month, your yearly dues, because that's where 60 or 70% of their revenues come from. It's those membership cards. Wow. So they need you to want to come to become a cult member. It's the $1.50 hot dog and drink right at the front of the store, and you smell the watery hot dog juice when you come in. It's the $4.99 rotisserie chicken, which, Jim, I have eaten on many occasions at friends' houses. These are lost leaders. They will never raise the price so that they'll keep you paying those membership dues, which they haven't raised since 2017, but they bet that when they do raise them, you'll keep coming for these bargains. Also, the lack of labels, the confusion of the mute, opaque cardboard boxes. That's also very deliberate, so you can feel that you're discovering things.
Wait. I am very disappointed in you, Corby Comer. Of all of our guests, there is no one who is more pro-worker than you. And one of the things that really stands out about Costco is they apparently pay and treat their staff incredibly well. Is that a fiction or is that real?
It better be real, because we talked about it a lot during the pandemic. And I think that this figure said $22 average as opposed to, what is the hourly rate?
$26, I think it said.
$26.
It's amazing.
Much higher than, vastly higher than other large retailers. Yes, they had that reputation. But this was an inside look at why the shopping experience breeds this loyalty and motivation to fill your car with stuff that will take you a year to use.
So is the same thing true with BJ's or not? Because that's the other one that is a club that you have to join to shop there, right?
I don't know the answer to that, do you?
Yeah. No, I remember during the pandemic, there were a lot of altercations in BJ's.
But really?
The fault of management, or it was just they dramatically took place at BJ's.
You mean fights in the aisles?
There were fights in the aisles.
Fights in the aisles.
A good fight at a place like that is there's nothing wrong
with
that.
Well, we were all desperate
now,
for toilet paper.
Before
then,
you
right?
go, here is a quiz. Marjorie doesn't like quizzes, so I'll
like
have you.
I don't like quizzes.
Which candidate for president, a losing candidate, who is quite wealthy, the first time he was seen in public after his loss, was he and his wife pushing a carriage, two carriages actually, loaded with paper towels and other cheap items from Costco? You have 15 seconds, Corby.
I'm going to punt and say it was George W. Bush who looked at a product scanner and said, what will they think of these days?
Good guess, but wrong. It would be Willard Mitt Romney, formerly of Belmont, Massachusetts. Google the photograph. It is great. Corby, it is wonderful to see you.
And you.
Thank you so much. Corby Comer.
Corby, thank you very, very much.